Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name, you will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, welcome everybody, another Studcast. Welcome, Stud, too. And listen, we're only a week away, Ron, from Christmas Day, and I have never seen so much happening here since I saddled up with you. I think it's like more than 3 years ago now. I hear you giving all of your fans, you are giving them something special, a Christmas present this year. So is it true that your new streaming channel, it's called TennesseeStudStreaming.com, all lowercase, TennesseeStudStreaming.com. It's going to be available for fans starting next Wednesday, Christmas Day.
That's correct, my man. And everybody that checks it out, once it's up, is going to get themselves a free three-day trial run, man. And then after those 3 days, if they decide they like what they see and they get ready to subscribe, they can do that for only $4.99 a month. And for those that want to pay less, often the monthly, and maybe get a little sweeter deal, have something special for you, too. For the entire first year, the first 12 months, the price is normally $4.99 per month. The cost is on the gun, which is... It would be if I charge that $4.99 per month for the entire year, it would be $60. But if you pay for the entire year up front, I'm going to lower that price by 15% to just $49.99 for the entire first year. That's basically just pennies over $4 a month.
All right, so only $4.99 per month, $4.99 per month. Absolutely tremendous deal, in my opinion. I know this because you let me have a look already at the channel. I was blown away by how much content is already there. In my opinion, it truly is the best deal in wrestling. But that's not all you're going to do. I hope you don't mind me telling your Studcast listeners this, Stud. But since this streaming channel has practically everything you've ever done all in place right there, you're really going to be going one step farther.
Yeah, I am, man. I've decided to put the new weekly Studcast that we've been working on for months here onto the streaming channel for free at no extra cost for everybody. And all that content is going to include the new Studcast with videos from actual Southeastern TV shows made 44 years ago. And it's still going to be at only $4.99 a month.
All right. That definitely makes it not just the best deal in wrestling, but it may be the best deal ever in wrestling. That is so cool.
Well, speaking of the weekly Studcast, Dave, I've got one more surprise for everybody. The first new Studcast is going to be the last one available on all the old outlets. It'll be on the New Year's Day, January 1st, 2025. It's got a video in it of historic match. The first time both you and I are going to be on the screen together in that one. And it's going to feature a video of the special Southeastern match that week, which was recorded 44 years earlier with Bob Armstrong and I against the Mongolian Stomper and Don Carson in a never-before-done Southeastern tag team match where both losers had to leave the territory. So both tag losers in the tag match had to go. So for the first time, fans are going to get to see an actual match on a studcast, and that's going to be on January 1st, New Year's Day.
You know, you've been telling us that this was coming, Stud, and now it's almost here. So for more than 7 years, you've given us your best with every studcast, and in the process made it one of the best wrestling podcasts in the world, anything out there. I think this is going to make your studcast bigger than ever and your streaming channel a huge success.
Well, I certainly hope so, man. And I hope fans are going to like both of them. I've been working on this project for a long time, as you know, and my fans are some of the best in the world, and I'm really pleased to be making these announcements today.
All right, speaking of making announcements, I know you were scheduled to do a Facebook Live appearance last week. We talked about that, but then you had some technical issues. Some problems came up at the last minute, and you had to cancel it. You want to tell us about that?
Well, not really, be honest with you, no, but there's nothing I hate more than disappointing fans, man, and no. So when we clean up the technical issues and we get ready for sure, I'm going to be rescheduling another one of these live Facebook appearances, and I'm going to make sure it happens. And I've not done one in a long time, and now that I've got so many new things coming up here, it seems like the perfect time to get back on board with those.
All right. All of this is fantastic news. I can't believe that we're just getting to it. But today, where do we ride first, and how do we get this thing started?
Well, we're going to discuss a lot of different subjects in this one, Dave. My returning to Southeastern, we're going to talk about that as the Mass Tennessee Stud. Going to be one of those subjects. And we're going to be taking a closer look at what Birmingham, being the new city in the territory, was already doing to dramatically improve the payoffs for our wrestlers each week. That's going to be another subject. Then we're going to focus on the card for the now four major Southeastern markets. Instead of the three, we've graduated to four. And we're going to be talking about the first week of December of 1980 with that card. We're also going to cover the TV show promoting that card, the results of the matches, the attendances for all four of those major markets. Then hopefully we're going to have time for another learning tree question at the end of this podcast.
Well, obviously that sounds, it definitely sounds like another full ride. Our last studcast run was huge with the fans. It ended with the Masked Tennessee Stud making his first ever appearance in the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory. You had been wrestling down on the Gulf Coast off and on for almost 3 years, but no one in that part of the country had ever seen the masked version of the Tennessee Stud until the last week in November of 1980. By the way, I had a lot of people hit me up in the past week about the title of the last studcast. Fans know very little about how we do things around here, and they absolutely have no idea how much work you put into every studcast. They definitely don't know the last thing you do for every episode is pretty important. You pick the title for the new studcast. So the people that hit me up said they wanted to know why you called the last studcast Tennessee Stud Saves Southeastern.
Well, Dave, I guess I have a natural Booker's mentality, man. And sometimes I just like making fans wonder about something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in the last few episodes, there's been a lot of controversy around, as always, Don Carson and his Mongolian Stomper. And I've talked quite a bit lately about the changing of the crew. And it was already beginning at this time. Wrestlers such as Carson and his Stomper had been in Southeastern for almost a year this time. They had been there a couple years earlier for a little bit. This time, they'd been there for almost a year. And they've been wreaking havoc, man, everywhere as long as then this past year. So sometimes I'm sure it seemed they almost owned the company, basically, A great example of that is the Stomper, who until recently had held the Southeastern belt and the TV trophy, had eliminated both me and my brother Robert in 1 month's period of time. So as the booker, I wanted to give fans the impression that Don Carson and the Mongolian Stomper were basically kind of taking over Southeastern. And then in the last Studcast personality profile, I made that interview for my home about Carson and the Stomper, and vaguely threatened to make some kind of Southeastern return.
All right, so now I'm beginning to see why you called the last one Tennessee Stud Saves Southeastern, and hopefully those that ask me the question will understand that too. I'm sure they'll pick that up. Okay, what I don't understand, though, is if you were going to come back under a mask as the Tennessee Stud, why did you not book yourself on the card to return as a mystery man, as it had been done so often?
Well, you kind of just answered your own question in a way, Dave. If that was the way it was often done, mm-hmm. as a decent booker, why wouldn't I do it in another way? So give the first run to the masked Tennessee Stud even more impact. To show up before I was even expected, and to arrive there basically unannounced on these live shows, and I was wreaking a little havoc of my own, talking about Stomper and Carson wreaking havoc. I was able to wreak a little havoc myself.
All right, so that makes more sense now that you've said it that way. Wrestling fans had no idea how thankful they should have been for great bookers. All right, so are we going to find out now how the new city of Birmingham and its payoffs was going to affect the wrestlers?
Yes, sir. And I want to give fans an idea of the value of adding just one major market to a territory. Before the last week in December of 1980, Birmingham had only had two Southeastern events ever. So the first was an all-time building record of over 7,000 fans. And then the second one, which was in the last Studcast, we had more than 6,000 fans. So the average price of the ticket for Southeastern in 1980 was only, Dave, believe it or not, $4 for an average. So let's take that second event and let's break that one down.
All right.
We had 6,000 fans at an average of $4 a ticket, which amounted to a $24,000 gross house. Now, we were paying 28% always of the gross house went to wrestlers and referees. And that 28% on a $24,000 house came to a total of $7,720. There was 14 total wrestlers on that card, and four of them wrestled twice. And there were also two referees on the card. So the average pay for the wrestlers alone would have been $430 each. But obviously, you got wrestlers and referees that are in those first two or three matches that don't deserve a main event payoff, and they're not going to get paid that that big an amount. So this event had 10 guys that made main event money. Mr. Wrestling number two wrestled for the Southeastern Championship against a Mongolian Stomper in the main event. Plus, there were eight wrestlers in the eight-man, two-out-of-three-fall tag team match. Joe LaDuke, Norvell Austin, and Ron Bass, and Don Carson. Now, all of those guys got $550, not that $430, but $550 each. And the wrestlers that wrestled twice, which was Brad Armstrong, Bob Armstrong, Jerry Stubbs, and Randy Rose, they all got an extra $600. I mean, they got an extra $50 each, which mm-hmm. they got $600. So the opening two matches was Roy Lee Welch versus the Big C, number two, which is Jerry Brown, mm-hmm. Charlie Cook, and Dennis Condrey. All four of those guys got $375 each. The two referees got $260 each.
Okay. How much would that $600 payoff be like in today's money?
You're going to ask me that. So I already looked it up, man. It would have been, and this is pretty shocking to me, man. I don't know if it is to you, but that $600 in today's money would be worth $2,290.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking 1980 money, $600, now worth $2,300 in today's money. I hope nobody's trying to buy chicken or eggs. Wow. So any crowd in Birmingham that was over, say, 5,000 fans probably paid main event wrestlers at least like $500, I would say, back in 1980. And in today's money, that has to be close to like a couple of grand for anybody.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
All right. So how much were those same wrestlers making in the small towns that they were wrestling in before Southeastern ended up in the big city of Birmingham?
That's a great question. And wow, this is the one that really excited the wrestlers. Most nights in those little small cities, they would probably only make $100, maybe $150.
Right.
Now, that's less than one quarter of that, say, this $600 that we just talked about that they made in Birmingham on the second card there. So that first night with 1,000 more people than the one we just figured would have made each one of them probably $100 more than that. So that 7,000 crowd would have probably made them as much as $700, maybe even close to $8. So that's why I wanted to point out just how important having that new major city was to the wrestlers, even though and it was the longest trip in the territory by far. 500 miles round trip from Pensacola and back, and they made it every Monday night. That kind of payoff kind of made it worth their while, obviously. That 500-mile sounds like a lot. A round trip, that is a lot. Actually, even you driving that many miles a day,
yeah.
And then wrestling, too.
Yeah.
But we only had to do it one time a week. And there were a lot of other territories, like the Florida territory, the Carolinas, Mid-South, out of Oklahoma, and many territories out west that had 600, some of them 800 miles round trip.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That every week. And to be honest with you, a lot of those made those 600 and 800 type of miles of round trip maybe 2-3 times a week.
So it really sounds like they're truck drivers who were going to wrestle at the end of every trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously some wrestlers were spending their lives on the road. I mean, it really sounds like that.
Well, many of them were. And that's why so many of them, they ended up getting, I hate to say it, killed in car wrecks and maimed. And,
wow. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It happened to so many guys because we were driving so much and in the cars so much.
You know, people don't realize that. And if you look it up in wrestling, and you see, a lot of times you can see different articles that say wrestlers who died too young, or this list of wrestlers that have now moved on. It is unbelievable when you look it up and you see and you hear so many bad things about wrestling. Oh, he died of drugs or this or that. In this case, Ron, you guys were on the road a tremendous amount of time, and it really is surprising how many were killed in car wrecks. It's really sad. And anyway, I love when you break things down like this for us. It's really been fascinating again, as usual. I think that most of the fans listening are, like me, interested in how it all worked, and nobody explains that better than you do, in my opinion. All right. Are you ready to set us up with the card? Let's go for the card for the four major markets. The first week in December of 1980. Take us back in time.
All right, my man. The first opening match was with a new Japanese wrestler that had just arrived. This is, I think, his second week there. His name was Oki Shikina, and he was going to be wrestling against a young guy that had become an overnight superstar. I was amazed at how easy and how fast this guy had become a star. And that was Brad Armstrong. The second match was Don Carson versus the very controversial man from New York City, one of the famous Valiant brothers, Johnny Valiant. Next was the new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, Norvell Austin, and he was going to be given a return match to the former champion, Jerry Stubbs. And then for the Southeastern Tag Championship, the new champions, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, they had won their match. They were the new champions, but they refused to give Bob Armstrong and Brad Armstrong, the former champions, a return match for the belts. And so Bob was going to have to team up with Charlie Cook to get a shot at the titles. And in a Texas death match, Big Ron Bass was taking on Joe LeDuc. Wow, that was going to be wild. And the main event for the Southeastern Championship was the Mongolian Stomper. And he was going to be facing the Tennessee Stud for the Southeastern title.
All right, cool deal. There seems to be a lot going on in this event. The new tag champions refused to defend in an automatic return match against the past champions. Joe LeDuc and Ron Bass were going straight into a Texas death match after what happened last week, and a new masked man that everyone knew who he was going after the Southeastern title. All right, I tell you what, this is a good place for a break. When we return, Ron, maybe you can explain why there was so much controversy going on between so many wrestlers in this crew. All right, that's a lot to cover. We're going to do that when we return on this Studcast. Attention, Studcast fans. The Stud has a special gift for you on Christmas. A brand new streaming channel, TennesseeStudStreaming.com. With the title Tennessee Stud Streaming, all in small letters. It opens specially for you on Christmas Day. You'll get 3 free days to explore hundreds of hours of content, every bit of which is the result of his work in the almost 20 years he spent in wrestling. It's not nearly complete yet and will not be for years because he is still working on it and adding to it every day. After your 3 free days are done, if you like what you see, you can subscribe there and get it all for only $4.99 per month. $4.99 per month, or the special yearly membership for only $49.99, saving you 15% for the entire year at just over $4 per month. And that includes the new weekly Studcast. Free. You will not find anything like it anywhere. Take a lifetime ride with the Stud. All right, Studcast fans, welcome back, everybody. This Studcast, this one is number 379. The title is LeDuc versus Bass, Texas Death, Tennessee Stud debut. So before the break, Stud, we were talking about why there was so much going on between so many wrestlers in the crew. Maybe you can settle some of that for us.
Well, you know, David, had a lot to do with bookers, you know, and it was kind of up to bookers just how many angles they wanted to run at the same time. And some, usually the older bookers, as an example, they only ran one angle at a time because that was kind of the way it was done, especially back in the 1930s, all the way into the 1950s. Bookers worried, man, that fans would not believe it. They wouldn't believe it if there was more than one important match or more than one angle happening at a time. Usually they had something going on between two top wrestlers, or maybe something going on between two top tag teams at the same time. So many territories didn't hire a bunch of stars at the same time. Therefore, They had a lower level of talent, basically. A lot of the guys toward the bottom of the card weren't very good in the ring. And that was often made those bookers not able to have great man angles. And, you know, and because these guys down on the bottom of the card couldn't make these angles look good. Mm-hmm. And obviously that was going to hurt their attendance. So a poorly done angle could actually set business back some. And when that happened to Booker, he had lost that, what I call the critical element, man, of a Booker, the momentum that he had to create and he had to keep going, be able to make money.
Yeah.
And that was probably that Booker pretty soon looking for another job. So the TV that we're about to look at is a real good example of this, of doing what was happening is we were doing a lot of angles at the same time, and basically because we had good talent from top to bottom just about, we were making all of those angles work. So when that happened, there was usually something on the card for everybody. And just about every match was interesting, if not totally spellbinding in some cases.
All right. So, I mean, how did this TV, the first week of December of 1980, how did the TV start?
Yes, this one started with a ball of fire, kind of, you know, and it came right out of the standard opening for each one of the shows with the end of what happened on the last match of the last TV show. And that match was that Alabama championship match with Bob Armstrong against another top star, Ron Bass. And wow, and as that match developed, the ring started to become surrounded by other wrestlers highly involved in the championship match. So that's basically what it shows. That there's guys coming out of the dressing room. They're standing right next to the ring. Things are getting more and more interesting in this particular match. So that's coming out of the other regular opening. Here we go. We got we got in the ring, Bob Armstrong. You've got Ron Bass in the ring. Now you got Don Carson, the Mongolian Stomper. You had Dennis Condrey and his cousin Randy Rose. All of them were standing on one side of the ring. On the other side of the ring, you had Joe LeDuc and Brad Armstrong on the other side of the ring. Joe LeDuc, had that upcoming Southeastern title match with the Stomper. And, he had a reason for being out there. And because these other guys were there was another reason. Then you had Condrey and Rose. And they're going to be in the upcoming tag championship match the following week, with Bob and Brad Armstrong. So the first thing fans saw after the regular TV opening then was these six wrestlers all coming in the ring at the same time. Then you had Armstrong and Bass, and a studio crowd was going crazy. So the TV show was out of time. Basically, and thank goodness it was. There was no standby match if it did end up early. And Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, they closed it out, man. And they closed out the match with all that excitement. They went to black. And when the screen went black, it immediately came back to life with Joe LeDuc. That video ended. And then it came live, and there's Joe LeDuc sitting at the set between both commentators, and almost immediately, Joe wants to show everybody another video of a match that happened as a result of the one they just watched the end of, right? So, bang, it's like back-to-back videos. Charlie Platt asked the director to take us into the Southeastern arenas, and Joe had the Mongolian Stomper in a bear hug. This was a match with Joe wrestling the Stomper for the championship. And he was about to beat the Mongolian Stomper. And then here came Ron Bass from out of nowhere. And the first thing he did is go to grab the referee and just threw him over the top rope. And then Carson obviously saw this happen, and he came in the ring. And now all three of those guys, they're attacking Joe LeDuc. And the Stomper joined in, and then, like I said, they were all on him, and there's Joe laying face first on the mat, and that's about the time that this unidentified, and as I said earlier, mass wrestler that nobody expected, he wasn't on the card, nobody had ever seen him before, and he entered the ring, and he tore into those three guys, and they took off running to the dressing room, and studio crowd erupted, man, just like those that was in the arena that saw that happen. So fans had never seen this masked man before. But definitely they recognized the body because he had a unique body, obviously. And they knew basically who was wearing that mask. And as the masked man was helping Joe LeDuc get out of the ring announcer, who was still in the ring, he stopped him. And he asked him, he says, what is your name? Right? Because, you got to have a name, right? So, and the masked man said, but you can call me the Tennessee Stud. Both of the buildings, man, all the buildings in which this match occurred, which was four buildings. Studio crowd went crazy, and so did those buildings. So you know, it was a different way to introduce a new wrestler.
Yeah, did this masked person look 6 feet nine, 265 pounds?
Pretty much identical to that.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, that's a great opening to the TV show. So back-to-back videos ending with the introduction of a new star, the Tennessee Stud. All right, so who was in the first TV match?
Ron Bass, the man that Joe LeDuc was talking about and had shown a little bit of there, Joe was still sitting at the set, and you know, they were going to be having a Texas death match in four cities, all the four major markets of Southeastern at this point. The following week, Don Carson accompanied Bass out to the ring and was ready to give him some advice when necessary. But in the case of Ron Bass, it wasn't necessary. He didn't need any advice. And Joe LeDuc, you know, he was already at the set, so he was invited to stay at the set and make some comments about this guy he was about to have a Texas death match with. And Bass got a win, man. I mean, fast, big time. And he got it with his devastating Texas Stampede move that left pretty much everybody ever did it to laying. And so Joe LeDuc barely had time to get in a comment before Bass got the win. And, you know, and I think LeDuc said something about Ron Bass was a dangerous, not just a dangerous, but also a vicious wrestler. And he said, he said he makes it look like he's happy to hurt somebody.
All right. It sounds like Ron Bass was making a statement. Who was on the second segment of the TV show?
Norville Austin, and he had regained the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt from Jerry Stubbs the week before, and they had been at it, you know, swapping that belt back and forth for weeks, it seemed like, and Norville watched the video of this latest win, and then he predicted that Stubbs wasn't going to get the belt back anytime soon. If we're switching the belt, ain't going to happen now. I'm going to hang on to it. The studio crowd was happy to hear that. But the next wrestler that got in the ring wasn't happy to hear it. Oh, Jerry Stubbs came out of the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And actually, he came out during the course of the video in the match. He got in the ring, and he started screaming at Norville Austin during the course of the video that, hey, here I am, man. Why don't you come on over here and get in the ring instead of sitting there and watching something, you know? So it seemed like, you know, that fans booed Stubbs, but, you know, Stubbs loved that. He didn't mind being booed. He loved being booed a lot more than he did being cheered. So Norville knew how to get to him, though. And so when the video ended, Norville just ignored him. And when the video ended, and he had his belt sitting right there again, he knew how to take the smile off of Stubbs' face, and and to make him mad, man, to get him more pissed off, I guess. So he got up from the set, and he put his championship belt on over his clothes, around his waist, and it kind of instantly reminded me of Norville's former tag partner from years and years ago, man, which was Sputnik Monroe. And Sputnik Monroe was famous for taking his belt and wherever he had won a championship belt. And Sputnik liked to go down. Memphis was a great example. Memphis, Tennessee, yep. He'd go down on Beale Street, and he would wear his championship belt on the outside of his clothes, go from bar to bar on Beale Street. And so Norville gave the Sputnik Monroe shot to Stubbs. And I felt a little sorry at that point for Stubbs' opponent. by this point, by that point, trying to introduce the match, and Stubbs, now Stubbs is mad, you know, and Thornton and Norvell had pushed all his buttons, man, and he was wearing his belt on the outside of his clothes, and so it turned out that Ron Bass wasn't the only wrestler in Southeastern that day that turned out to be extremely vicious, because Jerry Stubbs, He was worse than Ron Bass. I mean, you know, he left his guy laying too, man. He totally destroyed his opponent.
This TV show is really off to a great start. Four videos and two heels back-to-back, leaving their opponents laying. All right, so take us to the personality profile. Who was on that, Stud?
Well, Charlie was on the profile set in the big studio by himself. And Les was in Studio B. That's what we called the second studio. And he was with Don Carson and Mongolian Stomper. Now, the Mongol had his belt on, and he had that truck shock with him that he was, you know, he loved to crank that thing, and he was cranking that truck shock. And Stomper was scheduled to face the new masked man, the Tennessee Stud, that had gotten involved the week before out of nowhere. And he was going to be wrestling for the championship the following week. So Les started things off, or at least he tried to, but Carson immediately, as always, interrupted him. And he wasn't talking. He was screaming just about this entire segment here. He was so angry. And he started off by asking where the Southeastern Commissioner Don Curtis was today. He said, my Stomper is definitely not going to be defending his belt against Ron Fuller next week or ever. And and he kept screaming. His Stomper, you know, he said, had beat both the Fullers, Ron and Robert, in lose-or-leave matches. And he said he refused to allow his champion to wrestle any mass wrestler that the Stomper had already beaten, especially one in a lose-or-leave match, and especially one that called himself the Tennessee Stud. So that he said that everyone in this part of the world knew that was really Ron Fuller, and Ron Fuller wasn't supposed to be there at all, and certainly not wearing a mask. So he said, no one should be trying to pull the wool over my eyes. You imagine Carson saying that. Or my Mongol's eyes, he said, because my eyes... Great line. He said, my eyes, like me, never lie. And he said, that is the Tennessee Stud. That is definitely Ron Fuller. And then he says, can you imagine, Les Thatcher, somebody losing a loser leaves match and is supposed to be gone for at least a year, then coming back less than 2 months later wearing a mask? So then he opened the door for Les, and Les finally got in there, and he said when he got a chance to talk, he asked Carson right off. He said, do you happen to know a man called the Big C that everybody in this part of the country knew was really Don Carson? he says, a guy that lost, he was somebody that lost the loser leaves match, and he came back 2 days afterward as the Big C. And then he says, in fact, Don, he says, were you not unmasked a few weeks ago? And are you not Don Carson? And are you still here? Like, how can you complain when what you've done is? So the crowd in the studio, they erupted. I mean, he really nailed Don. But that just made Don more upset. So Don, you know, and his Mongol had the Mongol. Mongol went nuts, but the Mongol threw his truck shot on the studio floor across the room, and he got in Les's face, and he started barking like a dog. they were really into it. So, and Carson was screaming that his champion was never, ever going to defend his belt against anybody that had already been beaten in the lose-or-leave match. And a guy like that wears a mask, he says he's got real gall, and he's an indecent guy to show up as a masked man. And he said that's all he had to say. And Curtis, you know, he said, Don Curtis himself, he says, I don't care who he thinks he is. He is not ever going to make this match happen. So at this point, this had set the studio audience on fire. They were loving it. So they were so loud you could clearly hear them from one studio into the other.
Wow.
And Carson and the Stomper were about to leave the studio when Les demanded that they come back. Because, you know, he said, because Don Curtis has sent a message to you, Don Carson. And he says, to you and your Stomper. And then he goes, and he sent it in this morning. And then he says, and he made a video, and he wanted you to see this. So Don Curtis was short and sweet on the video. He said he had put up with Don Carson, said far too long, with a mask and with no mask, and eliminating wrestlers under so many ridiculous circumstances that he didn't care anymore whether Carson and all his men stayed or left Southeastern Wrestling immediately. And then he said, if Don Carson, if you and your Stomper have any intention of not facing the Tennessee Stud for these upcoming championship matches, he said, what you should do is you should give the Southeastern belt to Charlie Platt or Les Thatcher before this TV show ends, and then you can be gone from Southeastern Wrestling forever. So the first pop from the studio early, just moments earlier, was nothing compared to that pop.
Yeah,
but he's saying, get out of here, right? So both Carson and Stomper, they had a screaming fit, but they quickly left the studio, but they took the belt. So Les reminded everyone that Don Curtis had said, and that he did not intend to have the Stomper defend it. If he didn't defend the Southeastern belt in the coming week against the Tennessee Stud, they had until the end of this TV show to deliver the belt to him or Charlie Platt at the set. When the Tennessee Stud made his entrance into the other studio where Charlie Platt had been sitting for the personality profile, and he got a big standing ovation, obviously, from the studio crowd, and Charlie Platt explained to the fans that the Tennessee Stud was told to not come to the set until he heard what Don Curtis had just said, the explanation that had just been made by Don Curtis. So Stud thanked all the fans for their wonderful reception, and he promised Ron Fuller he was going to make him proud, even though he didn't, at this point, know whether he was even going to be wrestling this coming week or not. So it was hard to follow what had just been said and done in the other studio, but Charlie had one more surprise to deliver from Don Curtis, and he really enjoyed this one, as you could only imagine. So he asked for Don Carson to come to the set. Well, you know, Carson had come to the set a couple of weeks ago and found out that he was going to be in the ring with four guys after losing a tag match, and they have a minute to do whatever they wanted to him. So he was kind of hesitant to come, but he came on across the studio from his dressing room. And he said that when he got there, Charlie informed him that Don Curtis had one more thing that he wanted to happen on this TV show. And so Don Carson says, well, what does that have to do with me? and he said that he wants you to wrestle in the last match of this TV show against the Tennessee Stud. So that was the biggest explosion of the three from the studio crowd during that whole profile.
I mean, to me, that was another of those classic personality profiles. Don Curtis had to have really enjoyed the thought of the Tennessee Stud ending the show against Don Carson, no less. All right, so who was in the next TV segment?
Well, the new Southeastern Tag Champions, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, and they joined Charlie at the set with their belts. They had just won on the week before, and they wanted to watch part of the video of their win over Bob and Brad Armstrong. And it was their first try. They were bragging about that. They won their belts in their very first try. But I say they wanted to watch part of the video because when the video got close to where they had stole the belts, they both screamed for Les and Charlie to stop the video right there. Right, stop the video. Don't show any more of this video. You know, and so fans didn't they said fans, and then so Charlie and them asked them, they said, well, what's this all about? Why don't you want that to be seen? And they said, well, we don't want the fans to see any more of our secret moves, you know. They had their own excuse, man, for having won the deal, man. So as if that wasn't enough, they had already refused to give the Armstrongs an automatic return match, something every tag team was entitled to after they lost their belts. They had agreed to defend the belts, but only if Bob Armstrong would take another partner, and he chose Charlie Cook to be that partner instead of Brad.
After just winning the belts, they were making up these rules already. Wow. All right. So who was in the third TV match?
Bob Armstrong and Charlie Cook. They were the team that's going to get the shot at them. And those guys were running their mouth at the set. So they came into the ring and they were facing the first two. There were two Japanese arriving here back to back, basically. The first one was already there. He was the new Japanese there named Oki Kishikina. And they were going to be wrestling against Oki Shekina and a masked man called El Diablo. Now, Shekina was holding his own, but El Diablo wasn't any match for either Charlie Cook and certainly not Bob Armstrong. So this was a good tag match, and it lasted almost 15 minutes. But Bob took the match with the sleeper hold on El Diablo at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now I guess it was time for the Tennessee Stud's first Southeastern Gulf Coast TV match, this one against Don Carson, and I'm sure eagerly awaited by the fans. So how did that go?
Well, it was a very different beginning than what the Stud had expected, I think. On his way to the ring, Johnny Valiant, who the Stud had barely had a conversation with since this TV was his first day back in the dressing room. And for almost 2 months, he'd been totally out of action. So the Johnny Valiant stopped the Stud on his way to the ring, and he asked if he could watch the Stud's back. And he said, you know, I'd like to stand in your corner, you know, for the match. So, you know, the Stud, I guess, I thought that was an extremely strange request. But he told Valiant, yeah, if you want to wait by the dressing room over there, you can watch the match. So from the other dressing room, Don Carson, the Mongolian Stomper, they came across the studio at that point, and they went straight to the set where Charlie and Les were. And Carson was telling Charlie and Les that he and the Stomper had talked about it, and they had decided that they would like to stay in Southeastern Wrestling, and that the Stomper was definitely going to be defending his belt against the Tennessee Stud next week. So when they came back to the ring, Carson got in the ring. Mongolian Stomper, he stayed right there on the floor next to the ring, by the ring post, right, the dressing room door, basically. And the Stud had not been in the ring for almost 2 months, but that meant, man, he was extremely healthy, and he was very fired up to get back in action. Basically, Carson didn't stand a chance, and it wasn't but a few minutes before the Stud put the Fuller leg lock on him in the middle of the ring. And the studio popped, obviously, you know, and that whole, you know, the strange thing about the Fuller leg lock is it puts you in a bad and vulnerable position when you put that hold on, because you end up on your back and your legs end up kind of sticking straight up in the air, and they're tangled with somebody else's legs, and it's not a good position to be when you got the Stomper standing 15 feet away from him. And so here came the Stomper. As soon as they put the hold on Carson, here came the Stomper up on the apron. He shot through the ropes and he charged into the ring, and he was coming across to stomp me, the Stud, off the hold. And here came Johnny Valiant, man, came flying across over top of me and Carson. And He hit the Stomper with a beautiful cross body block. He sent Stomper flying backward out through the ropes and out on the concrete. And then when the Stud got to his feet and Carson was being helped away from the ring by the Stomper, the Stud shook Johnny Valiant's hand for the first time. And there's going to be a strange relationship between Tennessee Stud and Johnny Valiant.
Interesting. But what a great TV show with a little bit of everything in that thing. All right, so what happened in the arenas the next week?
Well, in all four of the major cities, Brad Armstrong continued his winning streak. He had yet to lose a match. And he did it with another Russian leg sweep. And he was off and running, man, as a star. Johnny Valiant, who was in his second week in the territory, he got a big win over Don Carson. In the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship match, Jerry Stubbs, he won his belt back. But in a very heelish way over Norvell Austin, there's going to be a lot more between these two guys. In the Southeastern Tag Championship match, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, they made their first of many successful victories. This time, they came over Charlie Cook and Bob Armstrong. They won, actually, over Charlie Cook. And the next week, they were not going to be so lucky when they were forced to give the Armstrongs that return championship match. Jordan Duke and Ron Bass, they had an extremely bloody and brutal Texas Death Match that lasted almost 45 minutes. I've never seen a Texas Death Match last that long. And they ended up both fighting out into the floor and all the way back to Bass's dressing room. So there really wasn't a winner. It was kind of like watching the Stomper in LaDuke. I mean, it looked just like about as bloody as those type of matches. So then in the Southeastern Championship match, Tennessee Stud made his first appearance ever, Southeastern Gulf Coast Territory, and he won the belt from the Mongolian Stomper. Don Carson was about to get involved in this one when Johnny Valiant flattened him, man, on the outside of the ring. Mm. The Stud beat the Stomper with a fuller leg lock right in the middle.
So it sounds like another big night for the fans. How about the attendance in the four major cities since, as you said before, this was the most difficult month of the year until you got to Christmas week? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, December was really, really hard on everybody in, I think, probably lots of sports, but certainly in wrestling. The first major city of the week, and this was going to be the case from then on, was going to be every Monday night. Birmingham was going to kind of start the week off on a Monday. And this was off to a tremendous start after those two huge crowds from the week, the first 2 weeks. We only had almost 5,000 fans in there on December the 1st, 24 days before Christmas. Unheard of, basically, especially in the cities in the Deep South like that. Mobile, the next night, had 4,500 people. Montgomery, the night after that, had 3,200. And Dothan had almost 4,000, 3,900 on a Friday night. So there was almost 17,000 fans in those four buildings in the first week of December 1980. And including the other two cities, when you threw in what happened in Pensacola and Panama City, down in the Florida Panhandle in the territory, there was more than 20,000 fans, easily way over 20,000 fans in the first week of December. And at that point, Dave, there were only a few territories in the world that topped those kind of numbers in December.
Wow. I tell you what, this has been another great one, Stud. You've taken us on rides in all directions, documenting and explaining what it was all about back when wrestling really was wrestling. Hey, I'm sorry to say we're not going to have time for a learning tree question this week. You've had so much coming up for us in the next month. I really have no idea how we're all going to get this whole thing done on a day-to-day or week-to-week or the rest of this month basis. So what is going to be coming next week, Stud?
Next Studcast is going to be airing on Christmas Day. And that'll also be the day that the TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel and that TennesseeStudStreaming, that's all in lowercase. So in case fans want to go, we're going to be opening that up, the streaming channel. And we're going to be opening it up on Christmas Day. And remember, you're going to get 3 days to try it out, absolutely free. And after that, you can get it all, everything on it, for only $4.99 a month. Or an entire year, 12 months, for only $49.99. Basically, just pennies over $4 a month if you want to get it annually. So next week, we will be covering the card, December the 9th, 1980. Basically, second week in December. This one is a 7-match card. It had 3 championship matches. It had a bull rope match between, it's going to be between, obviously, LeDuc and Ron Bass. After that, Texas Death Match. And then the Mongolian Stomper is going to be against Johnny Valiant. And the arrival, we're going to have the arrival of a, I call him a horrific, the Japanese star. I mean, we thought we were going to get two normal Japanese. The first one, Oki Shikina, mm-hmm. was, I would say, was a normal Japanese wrestler. Mm-hmm. But boy, this Saito.
Oh.
Wow. We got a monster. I mean, the monster arrived. And so we're going to cover the TV show next week and the results of the matches and the attendances and all 4 of the major markets. And we're going to also talk a lot more about what's coming on New Year's Day. Something good for New Year's Day as well. It's going to be the first new Studcast. It's going to have the first videos of from an original Southeastern TV show. This one came from a TV show on December 13th, 1980. And this is just the beginning of these videos. They'll have the matches. We'll have interviews. We're going to finally, Dave, start to have Southeastern TV shows in Studcast. And also, you and I are going to be seen live on these.
All right. The thought of me being seen live is pretty frightening for the listeners and the viewers eventually. So, all right, this is really going to be an exciting time for us, Stud. I tell you what, all your hard work will eventually give your fans the fantastic history of almost everything you've ever done in wrestling, without a doubt about that at all. All right, folks, you know how to get up with Ron, the Tennessee Stud. You can find him at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud on Facebook. Like and follow him there, automatically become friends with a living legend. On Twitter or X, very similar, he's at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow him there, too. Check out the fantastic website, TNStud.com, TNStud.com. This Studcast is going to be there with every Studcast ever done. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 Super Studcasts, 4 different 8x10 photos, and the best-selling novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you. And subscribe to the YouTube Southeastern Rewind channel, YouTube Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment right there. It's all set up for you. 454 total videos of the last 157 Studcast, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud too. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, Superstars of the Past shows, and so much more. YouTube Southeastern Rewind. It is the best deal in wrestling. All right. Any final comments, Stud?
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for their comments and their well wishes. Those people that have sent me nice comments about how much they appreciate me putting together a channel, man, that is all Tennessee Stud stuff. I mean, so thank you all very much for your well wishes. And once again, Sorry about our failure not to be able to do the recent live Facebook show. And hopefully we're going to get that taken care of and get it going soon. And please take care of yourselves and others. And may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955. On Twitter, X, Dave_doing, as in Dave's doing stuff. Yeah, Dave's doing stuff. Okay, on Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.